Yeah, this is a little bit different. I'm not going to lie. It feels good. Feels a little strange. I haven't been in studio. Well, there's an old Southern term, coon's age. I haven't been in a studio in coon's age. It's been a long time for me. To be back in studio at the Kia Studios is a thrill on a Saturday morning. John Fricke with you. My buddy Garrett Chapman is the technical director, executive producer, call screener, board operator. I don't know. He's got some other duties. I just talk into a microphone. And also with you as well here. So we're 10 to 2 today from the Kia Studios. And it's been, Garrett, it has been a while. I was sitting here trying to figure out the last time I was in studio.
It was probably with me.
Yeah, it may have been.
Honestly.
That would have been like October of 2023.
I think so. I think that sounds about right. That sounds about right. But yeah. No, it's great to see you. Folks, he walks into this studio, and I just, sight for sore eyes, man.
A sight for sore eyes.
It's been a minute since I've been able to see you.
A year and a half. I mean,
I think at least that long.
Yeah, well,
I talk to you all the time.
Yeah,
do it whenever we do a show together. It's always a pleasure. And now just seeing something other than a light on the board is
right.
Is a welcome. It's
well,
a welcome feeling.
You know, I sat in this seat for so many years. You know, I'm still looking over for Hugh and his towel. You used to have this gigantic towel. I mean, not like a little, you know, what a face. No, it was like a bath towel a white one that he would fold into like eight ways, and he would lay it over. And I mean, he had this huge towel, and he had the gallon jug of water. Remember that?
Yeah, I do.
Oof, man, he drank more water than a horse. And it was
ahead of the Stanleys before all these people had the Stanleys that
they
walk around.
Right. So it's great to be back in studio. I'm going to be in studio today, tomorrow, and then again on Monday night. And so it's good to be back in town, too. Going to go see Atlanta United tonight. My daughter Danny and I are going to go over to United. Well, she's got to do a little, because she works over there, obviously. And so I'm going to be over there doing a little bit. As soon as the show ends, we've got to run down to the stadium. She's got to take care of a few things. And then I'm going to be able to see the Five Stripes, which, the only thing. All right, so a couple of things just for anybody that's wondering, well, why weren't you in the studio for the last year and a half? How come you haven't been there? Well, I had a medical issue in October, actually Halloween Day of 2023. I think everybal knows I had a grand mal seizure, and I couldn't drive for a year or more. And so I had to do, it was like back to the COVID studio at home. And, of course, lately I've been having to I broadcast from up in Indiana because we're taking care of family up there, as you know. All right, but it's good to be back down here. It's good to be in studio. I'm with you all. You all know the phone number, 404-726-0929. All right, slower for you in Ackworth. 404. It's not a hard number to remember. You know, 404 is an Atlanta area code, right? Okay. 7260. And that's really all you got to remember. What's the number? 7260. Why? Because the first are 404, right? Okay. 7260. And then you got the rest. It's 929. Okay. What's their number? 7260. You'll get it. See, break it up. You'll remember it. Deshaun Tate, our college basketball expert, will join us in about 15 minutes, give us his impression of the Sweet 16. We say goodbye. I'll tell you a little inside baseball here. About, and I probably should have mentioned this the other day in terms of, you know, how you can score tickets to a game like tomorrow's game here, okay? And do it super, super, super easy. And what you do is, and this is true, by the way, if you want to go to the Final Four and you want to go to the title game, it's the easiest, it's literally the easiest ticket to get in sports. The ticket to the NCAA title game or a ticket to today. Because what you do is you go to the Final Four, just go to San Antonio, whatever the Final Four is, you go up there, it'll be, you right, Final Four day, which is Saturday. You stand outside the Alamo Dome, or whatever the hell the stadium names change all the time. Stand outside the Alamo Dome on Saturday night. Wait for the first game to end. You don't have to wait for the second game. Wait for the first game to end. And fans of the losing team say, screw it, hell with it, I'm out of here. And they're leaving the stadium. They're not sticking around to watch the second game. Their team just lost. They're not only out of there for the second game, they're going home. So you say, hey, anybody got any tickets for sale? You know, I'm looking for second game and for Monday night for the title game. You will get people, you know, how much do you want for a face value? I'll give you $20. And some people are so mad, they're just like, they'll hand it to you. You know, oh, here, just take them. Just take them. I'm telling you, it's unbelievable. It's the easiest thing in the world to score.
So you're telling me I already missed the boat on it?
Well, not if you're going to the Final Four in San Antonio.
Oh, that's true.
But the other night, sure, you missed the boat the other night.
You know what? I was down there at the Omni, sitting there talking to a bunch of Ole Miss people who were sitting there all sad.
You were in the hotel?
I was over at the Omni Hotel. We were doing something for, we had an event across the street.
Yeah.
So literally, I was right there with all of these Michigan people walking around.
As soon as Ole Miss loses, you know, you say, you know, because people are going home, especially
getting back on the airport. They literally booked a flight to go back home.
Or, you know, if you're Ole Miss, a lot of people just drove.
Yeah.
You know,
I saw people loading up into their cars.
Right. You say, you got tickets, you know, I mean, yeah, you know, I mean, so, yeah, I'll buy tickets. Yeah.
I missed an opportunity.
No, it's like the easiest ticket to score.
Dang.
Yeah. Toughest ticket is sports course Masters. But
Masters
the easy,
impossible.
Yeah, impossible.
Did you see the face value ticket for, like, well, what people are trying to sell
it's
it?
It's not face value. There's no face
no,
value.
No, there's no face value. But what they're trying to sell it for is
$3,000. Oh, yeah. Practice runs are $1,100, $1,200.
Like, respectfully, no. That's ridiculous.
Well, all right.
I've got my Masters hat on and everything, and I've never been to the Masters. I always have people who go and they bring me stuff.
Here's the thing about that, okay? That I would tell you, and I know this has nothing to do with what we're talking about today, but since you just brought it up and you're wearing a Masters hat and the Masters is coming up in a couple of weeks, I will tell you that it used to be when I was younger, you know, in the 80s, you could just go to Augusta and they had on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday for the practice rounds, and they had these green ticket windows out there and people manning them, about 20 of them. And you just walk up on Monday or Tuesday, it was $10. On Wednesday, it was $20. Of course, that's just ridiculous. There are no ticket windows anymore, obviously. And now for Wednesday, which is really the day you want to go is Wednesday, because the par 3 tournament is so cool to watch, and then you can still go around the course, and by Wednesday, everybody's there, and they're practicing, and they're playing in the par 3, and so you get to see all the stars. And it's not quite as crowded as the Thursday through Sunday is. But if you've never been to Augusta, and I know it's $1,200 or something to go, even if it's Monday, or even if it's the women's amateur thing, you know, maybe you could score tickets cheaper for that. Just to go to Augusta one time in your life, if you're a golf fan, yeah, it's worth it.
And whenever you go out to those professional courses, and I'm fortunate enough that I tricked somebody into letting me play at Eastlake, walking around on those grounds is just a beautiful thing.
Oh, look, I love East Lake.
Professional courses are just different.
It's great. East Lake, even the most ardent East Lake person will understand what I'm about to tell you.
Yeah.
East Lake is 0.1% Augusta.
And
okay,
exactly,
it's just not.
And that's exactly where I was going with that. That's 100%.
Augusta is Disneyland of golf. It is the greatest sports venue in the world.
Wow.
Of anything I've ever been to.
Even like have you been to like a Pebble Beach or
yeah,
places like that?
I've been to Pebble Beach.
Okay.
Pebble Beach doesn't rate anywhere close to Augusta.
Yeah. See, that's why it's number one on
my
bucket list.
And plus you have to go, because Augusta does it so well ever since they really built it up too, with all the city, kind of all the new stuff, you know, with all the new shops and everything. It's the South Shops, the main shops. You know, it's got the nicest driving range in the world, and then you go up Magnolia Lane and you go around the clubhouse and you're standing at the top of the hill, and the very first thing you notice when you're standing at the top of the hill, and you know, when I first went probably in 84 or something, and of course I haven't been in about 5 years, but when you're standing at, is that the course lays out in front of you, the back nine does. And so you're standing at the top and you could see Ray's Creek. You could see 12.
That's cool.
You know, you could see Amen Corner from the top of the hill.
It's like a bit. It's just a
you
big
just want to run down the hill. And the other thing you don't realize until you get there is that the back nine is built on the side of a hill, and that number 10 is a I'm going to fall down if I walk down number 10. It is straight down the hill. It goes out and goes phew, and drops off. And 18 coming back up the hill is man, it's up the hill.
So that's one of those courses where people are like, golfers aren't really. It's an endurance sport. Golfers aren't really athletes, whatever. No, it's endurance and walking around and maintaining that every little inch counts. And that's a crazy right. course.
So anyway, that has nothing to do with nothing. Let's get back into what we're talking about today. We'll have Deshaun Tate come in and fill us in on the Sweet 16. Then we're going to get to a couple of things, and mostly based on a couple of tweets, okay? Do we still call them tweets, or are they like posts? Anyway, a couple of tweets. One that was, to me, about the Braves, I dig that thing up here. Just drives me batty about some fans. You know, we're all fans. He was being snarky. I'm snarky, okay? I get it. I mean, it makes sense. I'm always going to be pretty snarky here. And then, of course, the Chipotle tweets that we got to get to, too. Oh, I should talk about that first, and then because I can't find this Braves one right now, but I will. And I'll kind of fill you in on it. Somebody shot me a tweet about the Braves and was being snarky towards me, and I'll walk you through that one. But the whole Chipotle. So I'm sitting on the plane in Indianapolis yesterday, okay? Last evening, okay? About 5:15, 5:20 at night. I'm on the plane. We're about to back out, and I'm just doing a last check before they shut the phones down. And I see this tweet of a dude posting a picture of Kirk Cousins at a what's that fancy dancing Mexicano restaurant, Chipotle?
Chipotle?
Yeah, that thing.
Chipotle?
So he's posting this picture of Kirk in Westlake at Chipotle, and I'm like, what in the world? And then Kirk responded to it, and he's like, yeah, chicken and salad is my thing, or whatever the hell he said. And I'm like, what the hell is this?
It's Chipotle Gate.
And so I immediately text Turtle and Carl and say, hey, Turtle, hey, Carl, have you guys seen this? What in the world is he doing at a Chipotle in Cleveland? And then that's the last I heard of it because I had the phone shut down and I'm on the Big Bird and landing at Hartsfield. So, I had to wait for an hour and a half or 2 hours before I'm like seeing the reaction to all of this thing, and so I know that Carl and Mike hit it pretty hard yesterday, and then the reaction came, and the reaction came from Ian Rappaport, who said this was not NFL related, and it came from his agent, a guy named Mike McCartney, his agent who said his tweet was. Who knew how much a visit to at Chipotle could blow up a guy's phone? And he used the emoji of a, hand in the face, Who knew how much a visit to Chipotle there could blow up a guy's phone? That's what his agent said. And Rappaport said it wasn't NFL related. Because, randomly, I think that, it makes plausible sense just to defend both of them that, a dude would get on a plane and fly from Atlanta to Cleveland to get himself a salad with some chicken on it at a Chipotle because you couldn't possibly do that at like 50 places around Atlanta. I mean, it would be impossible to find a Chipotle that would serve chicken with some lettuce in Atlanta. You couldn't do it. So you got to jump on a plane and go to Cleveland, right? Not Las Vegas, not New York, Cleveland to find a Chipotle that'll do that.
Because that's exactly what Ohio's known for is top-notch Mexican food.
Yep, exactly. And not NFL related, though, according to Ian Rappaport. No, it had nothing to do with the NFL. Has nothing to do with Cleveland needing a quarterback or Kirk Cousins wanting to play this year. No, it's not related to the NFL at all. Dude wanted some chicken with a salad. Okay, we'll get into that with you a little bit later on. Then I got to find this Braze tweet. Guy kind of digging at me.
Do you think he has a hot salsa on there? I don't think Kirk Cousins doesn't strike me as a hot salsa.
Oh, I got to get both kinds of salsa at the Chipotle.
See, but not you. I'm talking Kirk. I don't think Kirk likes.
He wouldn't
the
do the hot red.
I don't think he'd like it.
Yeah, I like the hot red.
He probably wants only the pico de gallo.
No, you got to have the hot red.
I agree. Yeah. It's so good. Oh, I'm gonna get Chipotle.
Yeah. Now I got you.
Yeah, you did.
Deshaun Tate, our college basketball expert, his reaction to what happened here in Atlanta and across the. Round of 32 there to get us to an Elite Eight, rather Sweet 16 to get us to an Elite Eight. Next, with John Fricke, live in studio, no less, at Colony Square on Sports Radio 99 The Game. Yeah, one of the many songs I considered from my opening, one of the classic openings in guitar rock history. I just was waiting for it to kick in. I know. Just great. Great stuff.
I felt like this would be perfect for Deshaun Tate.
What, not dribble, shoot, score?
No, I like this one. Thunderstruck is just ready to
roll. The Oren Romaine sing-along there?
No, you saw that Michigan State dunk last night. Where,
yeah, I know.
This is the first song that pops in my head.
Kind of a thunder dunk?
Right. Exactly.
Exactly. Thunder. All right, let's get into it. Well, yeah, Oklahoma City Thunder been playing pretty good, too. But that's a different story. Deshaun Tate, of course, as you know, at Tate's Take Sports, is our college basketball expert, and I lean on him during the tournament. I lean on him all year long because he knows the game inside and out, and he has been very kind enough to spend some time with us during the tournament, give us insights, and we will get into today's game, get his thoughts about today's game coming up a little bit later on. But I want to kind of begin with what's taken place over the last couple of days. Tate, how you doing, buddy?
Man, again, another trick question. Hey, Fricky, you must have been taking a page out of Mike Bell's notebook. And the reason why I say that is because he is the only other guy that has me on and says, Tate's Take Sports. Tate's Take Hoops.
Oh, sorry, dude.
No, it's okay. It was sports a long time ago, and I've since changed it a while back.
Oh, see, way back. Okay.
I know. And it's sports kind of stuck with people, and I wanted to make it more difficult anyway, so of course I had to choose.
Yeah,
hoops.
And besides,
thanks for having me,
yeah,
John.
Yeah, no problem, Deshaun. I am not about to touch Mike Bell's anything, okay? It's not going to happen. Be that as it may. So, Deshaun, what we had, let's go back to Thursday because I was looking at Thursday and I thought, if you were to tell an Arizona fan, hey, you're going to score 93 against Duke, you would, hey. Now, if you would have told a BYU fan, Alabama's going to score 113, what's with triple digits all of a sudden, just pop it all up? I thought you were supposed to lock it down and play tight, and we got teams making 25 three-pointers.
Well, listen, I think that, you know, some of these teams and coaches, staffs, and coaches and people that are drawing up the plays and all this stuff, they've been hearing the crap that people have been giving about college basketball ratings being down and they don't score enough points and they don't do this and they don't do that. Now, all of a sudden, you get that, you know, and then people are starting finding something else to complain about. You're talking about an Alabama team that just broke a record, something that hadn't been done since the 90s. I mean, not only did they score that many, you know, baskets in terms of, you know, from the perimeter the other night, but just the amount, how efficient they were on top of all of that, I think was even, you know, bigger conversation for me anyways, in my own opinion. And then, you know, obviously you talk about Arizona. How about the job that Caleb Love did, the phenomenal game, and obviously everybody knows about the connection between him and knowing how to kind of prepare a little bit for a team like Duke and what have you. And listen, I mean, some great basketball has been played, and if Arizona just had a little bit of just any inkling else that can help Caleb Love, we could be talking about Duke being on their way home instead of on their way to the Elite Eight playing today for a chance at a Final
You know,
Four.
With four SEC teams making it into the Elite Eight, we'll get into this about, yeah. You know, all right, exactly. I mean, the SEC's, you know, kind of held up its end of the bargain after getting 14 teams into the tournament here. Alabama, you know, boy, I tell you what, there are times that Alabama, and against BYU, when they set the record for threes, that Alabama looks unstoppable, and there are times, but it kind of all rises and falls on Mark Sears. I mean, there are times where Sears just goes next level and times where, I don't know if he just, because he's not a real big guy, I mean, this is why this is a lot of NBA experts will tell you, for as much and as dominant and as inspired as Mark Sears plays, beating Auburn at the buzzer or doing what he did against BYU or other times, he may not even get drafted.
Yeah, and I mean, that dude is as strong as all get out. And I mean, when you're looking at someone, obviously around this time of the year, you start looking at what the success is predicated on, and it's based on its leaders and it's based off of its experienced guard play. And obviously, that's what Mark Sears is, you know, obviously coming back and, you know, not going to the NBA, coming back and doing such things as this. Remember, this is a good little decent piece of the nucleus. I know everybody's in love with Duke right now and what they're doing, but, you know, a good piece of their nucleus is back from last year's Final Four. I mean, that's saying something. Like, that's pretty big. Obviously, they've got Aiden Holloway, who's a a transfer as well from Auburn, however that works out. But Grant Nelson is a – we start talking about Cooper Flagg. Listen, that's going to be the matchup for me, in my opinion. Grant Nelson is not a pushover. Now, is he as good as Cooper Flagg and everything else? Probably not. But that matchup within itself, like, Grant Nelson is a lot – bigger of a human than I actually thought that he was. And he's not skinny. He's a solid guy. So Duke is going to have their work cut out for them. They've got some size. They're coming with some good defense. They should make for some good
basketball. Let's hang on to that, because we are going to preview the games today coming up. I just want to go back to Thursday and Friday and react to...
My apologies.
No, John.
I know you do.
I'm with you. Florida takes out Maryland, and it was, you know, look, this Florida team, they're to me an interesting team. And in this game against Maryland, I showed, I think, again, why Florida can be so dangerous. While some teams can be top-heavy with a star or two, there are a couple of teams in Michigan State and Florida, those two in particular, which may be, devoid is the wrong word, may not have a true standout, but boy, are they deep teams that play together. And this Florida team is really deep. They run 8-9 deep, and they play so together in the way that they, you know, it's like Maryland was trying to figure out how to stop it, and I don't think they had any idea how to stop it.
They didn't. I mean, there's already been some away-from-the-court stuff, obviously, going on with their head coach and Kevin Willard, which I don't believe is, like, the greatest situation to be in when you're trying to contend for a national championship, and it's realistic because you're in the Sweet 16. But even more so, I mean, listen, we talk about Florida's depth, and they have some of the most in the country, number one, and then obviously, number two is the fact that Maryland has the most players within its starting five, or has a starting five that they showcase on the floor that averages the most points of any starting five in college basketball this year. The problem is that when Maryland goes to its bench, I think it's six-man averages maybe like 4 points a game, and everyone off the bench under him is less than that. So that didn't necessarily really help or play into the hands and for Maryland and down the stretch. I mean, give them credit. They've had a really good year this year already. But Florida's no pushover. I mean, we're sitting here talking about all these different teams, obviously staying within the SEC. Florida has been that team that has also been another team that's in the Elite Eight, Tennessee, in Gainesville by, what, I think 30? I mean, they are a real tough team. They got there pretty deep into the tournament last year as well, and returning some pieces too. And I mean, think about it. People always talk about the storylines and this and that, John, about you don't really have the storylines college basketball this year. We can mention so many of them for so many of these different teams. Florida is back almost 20 years later from arguably one of the best back-to-backs and national championship teams and rosters that were ever put together that nobody probably expected were going to win a championship when they came in. To have an opportunity to duplicate or replicate that by winning a national championship is big. It started with Maryland, and they're still rolling.
You know, we'll get to Texas Tech in a moment. Their win over Arkansas, and Arkansas obviously lost. It was a tight game, lost by two. Did this tournament run kind of give Arkansas fans a lot of reason to believe? Because I know they were grumbling a little bit during the year. That John Calipari was the right move?
Yeah, the run did. And, I mean, I think you kind of know what you're getting out of John Calipari when you brought him over from Kentucky. You know, you got to take the good with the bad. You're going to get recruiting, and you're going to play on some big stages and get some of the best players to play coming out of high school and all that good stuff. But you're also going to have to kind of somewhat deal with the fact that because you recruit that way, that you're not really going to have a lot of experience on your rosters and guys that played in NCAA tournaments and things of that nature. And so that can come away with either, Sweet 16 appearances, like we saw with them against Texas Tech, or it could end like it did in the first round against Oakland. So it is a little bit more of a risk that you do have to run. But I think they feel pretty good about where they are having Coach Cal. Just really can't afford to have the starts like they did this year with or without Boogie Flan, one of the best players in the country coming out of high school last year.
All right, let's talk Friday games. Purdue, one of the things that surprised me, well, I don't know if it spoke to, exposing Houston at all. Maybe it did, but I guess we'll find out when they're going to go up against Tennessee, and we'll talk about that coming up. But Matt Painter doesn't make many – one of the things that's true about Purdue, Matt Painter, underrated coach, if you don't know Matt Painter, underrated. Not just from an ability, but as a tactical coach. to make that kind of a mistake in not covering the inbounder under the basket at that point in the game is, I don't even, how does that happen, Deshaun?
Yeah, sometimes you get caught up in the moment. And another reason why I was really surprised that slip screen or the slip pass even happened the way that it did is because it's actually something that Purdue also runs. And I think that that's something that happens when you got your back turned to the, you know, defender sometimes or just going to help out and what have you. And, I mean, listen, we're talking about a hell of a ball game. Listen, I mean, very minimal mistakes, only 7 turnovers by each team. Anytime that happens in single digits, that's always a great thing. Probably surprises nobody that both of these teams only had 2 points apiece when it came to the fast break. But listen, a game well played by Purdue. And listen, you'll take the kind of season that Purdue had after losing a back-to-back player of the year in Zach Edey. And I know that it's probably going to sting a little bit more because they didn't have far to travel after yesterday's game because it was played in Indianapolis. But a fantastic game. And I mean, listen, Houston has adults over there. They have grown men. They don't have kids. They're probably not the tallest guys in the world, but they have guys that are really physical. And Purdue and represented the Big Ten well with a few other teams.
Auburn and Tennessee both showed out. Boy, I tell you what, that Tennessee defense is something when it wants to be.
Yeah, it is. And listen, I don't know what the over-under is going to be for the Elite Eight game between Tennessee and Houston, probably like 103. I'm being a little bit facetious. But I will say enough to say that, you know, Tennessee has that muck-it-up style, and I've been saying it ever since, and I'm going to die on that hill that, you know, I think that Rick Barnes sometimes gets kind of vulnerable. He's really hard to trust. I mean, they've been banging on this door for I don't know how long. I can't even tell you. You will probably know the last time they've been to a Final Four, if we can even say such things, John. So, I mean, listen, they're really playing for something here, obviously. And, you know, Tennessee is really, you know, a team that, you know, has Zakai Ziegler, one of the better point guards in the country, especially on the defensive end. Chaz Lanier, who is a transfer, is big-time offense for them, the little bit that they do have. They've got some ball players over there, but, you know, they're running up on a really – really focused Houston team who, honestly, I kind of anticipate to win the whole thing.
Talking with Deshaun Tatey is our college basketball expert. Tell me about your Michigan State Spartans there. You know, they I think they got a talking to by Tom Izzo at halftime. Came out and played much better in the second half.
They did, and Michigan State's not, you know, this isn't one of Tom Izzo's better Michigan State teams. I know that, you know, probably doesn't surprise a lot of people to see him getting as far as he has, because a lot of times when he has teams such as these and rosters that are constructed like this, this really typically makes those kind of runs and come from out of nowhere. You know, the Michigan State hasn't played its best brand of basketball in this tournament. Definitely was, you know, fighting back against, you know, New Mexico and Bryan at some times, obviously getting down by double digits to Ole Miss yesterday. And, you know, but being able to, you know, go deep into the bench and just have bodies to throw out there. They went with a much smaller lineup, especially with Cohen Carr being the starter. That probably was surprising, especially to Chris Beard and Ole Miss yesterday. But, you know, they grinded it out, you know, quite a bit. And I needed some help by a senior and Jayden Akins, who's been criticized quite a bit this year, and obviously needed Jace Richardson a little bit as well. And now they're playing for a chance to go to the Final Four. And, you know, they really needed to kind of dig their heels in the sand a little bit and find a way to gut out a win. And ugly or not, they found a way to do it, and they're advancing.
What's going to happen with Michigan State and Auburn? What's going to happen with Florida and Duke and Alabama and Tennessee? We'll check in next and ask Deshaun Tate to take us to the Final Four. Who does he like in the games today and tomorrow? We'll do that next. John Fricke with you on a Saturday, live from the Kia Studios on Sports Radio 90 on the game. NCAA Tournament, Elite Eight, the forgotten, you know, hey, it's the, you know, first four, it's the field of 64, it's the Sweet 16, it's the Final Four. Nobody ever says Elite Eight. They just don't. I don't know why. It just gets kind of lost. But the Elite Eight, and that's what we have today and tomorrow. And our college basketball expert, Deshaun Tate, at Tate's Take Hoops. I got to get that right. Is with us on the WayFord.com hotline. All right, Deshaun, 8 teams remain. 4 will go to San Antonio. Let's talk a little bit about how we stand with these eights. Let's begin with the game in San Francisco, 6:09 our time, tip-off tonight. It is all chalk, 1-2, 1-2, 1-2, 1-3, and the 1-3 game is the first game up. Texas Tech is a 3 seed, which has beaten a 14 in UNC Wilmington, an 11 in Drake, and a 10 in Arkansas, has yet to face a single-digit seed, and all they get is Florida. How do you see this game going tonight between the Red Raiders and the Gators?
Yeah, I like the Gators in this one. I just think it's probably going to be a little bit too much. We started talking before about the experienced guard play that they have, obviously, with Will Clayton and Richard. I think that the experience that Elijah Martin brings over from Florida Atlantic is something that, you know, is not only beneficial, but something that's, you know, critical, being able to prepare the guys and, you know, be able to speak on from that standpoint as to what it's like to be able to play at this time of year. And so I think maybe the X factor there could potentially be Alex Condon, the big man in the middle for the Gators. But if there is a team that is playing with house money, they're feeling no pressure. People are forgetting that they're even in the tournament, the most probably least talked about team remaining in the tournament. It is Texas Tech, and what JT Toppin has been for this team all year long, not just in this tournament, I think has been huge. Ultimately, you know, I am a believer that Darion Williams is one that has to step up and be really clutch for the Red Raiders on this one. They're going to be defensive minded, and it's really, really tough to get them to play outside of their brand of basketball. They win and lose that way. I think it will be close. It will be very close, but I think I'm going to go with the Florida Gators on this one.
Yeah, when Toppin came over from New Mexico, he really kind of reset the whole Texas Tech trajectory for the year, and he is, as you say, going to have to be large. Then everybody kind of going, okay, that's the appetizer. And then we get to the 8:49 game in Newark tonight between Alabama and Duke, which, honestly, you could make a case in a way, Sean, that there is no matchup in the Elite Eight, the Final Four, or even the national title game that might be more intriguing than Alabama against Duke.
This is basically a national championship, you know, type caliber game right here within itself in that late game. I'll say this much. You know, I know that Duke is a lot of people's favorites to even cut down the nets outside of Florida. And Alabama's got this really tough team. I don't think that they'll shoot it the same way. I'm going to roll with Duke on this one. I think it's still going to be really, really tough. I think the outlier here, or the elephant in the room, if you will, that sticks out like a sore thumb, is the fact that sometimes Alabama goes on these stints where they're just not defensively disciplined enough sometimes to my liking, and I don't think that that's something that is bodes well for a team like Alabama, because Duke is so balanced between his offense and defense now. Here's the difference sometimes in many situations like this. No, it shouldn't surprise anybody if Alabama walks away winning this game, is because also this time of the year is really about the experience. They have that. So many players coming back from last year's Final Four team. Duke is primarily predicated based off of its freshmen. We haven't seen such things happen where they go on to win national championships since Duke did it 10 years ago. I do like Duke here, but this will be their toughest. Everybody's going to get a tough test. Number one seeds and what have you. Houston had theirs yesterday. Duke will have theirs today, but I like them to win.
Deshaun, this just over here for a second on Cooper Flagg. Obviously going to be the number one pick in the NBA draft. Do you when you watch his game, he's a freshman, as he grows into his body, do you see NBA star, or do you see NBA superstar? Or do you, you know, it's, I know it's hard to project sometimes because there's a fine line between just being a really, really good all-star player and being a true superstar of the game. Does he strike you as being a superstar or just a star?
I see a star. I think the on the surface level, I think one thing bare minimum that you have to say is really good NBA player. I think he checks that box first. If his career panned out to be like another former number one pick, similar to being like an Andrew Wiggins, is that too much? I don't think so. I think that that's something that's fair. There's been comparisons to, you know, a couple of different players, Gordon Hayward being another one, Andre Kirilenko being another one. So I think for a guy like an Andrew Wiggins, who's certainly not a superstar, but worthy of being called a star or a number two option on an NBA team, I think something like that is fair and similar to what I see in Cooper Flagg at the next level. But I do want to challenge people first, John, to embrace and enjoy what you see him here on this level before we go to that level.
Sunday at 2:20 in Indianapolis, Tennessee and Houston, another game worthy of being a kind of a national title game in some respects here. I'm still questioning the Cougars a little bit because I'm not sure they have the punch to win it all. And if they don't have the punch to win it all, this is like the worst matchup they could get.
Yeah, Houston turns you over so well. I think that that's one of the concerning things sometimes, especially why, you know, Zakai Ziegler, the point guard over at Tennessee, why something like that is so critical. And honestly, believe it or not, Houston's one of the better three-point shooting teams in the country. And so, you know, I do like Houston in this game. Tennessee sometimes can be kind of a hard sell for me on a pick. But listen, I mean, they played in the toughest conference in the country this year. At some point, you keep knocking on that door, you're going to break through. Rick Barnes has been to the Final Four before. So I do believe that they have more than a puncher's chance to be able to knock down on Houston. But that's going to be a lot easier said than done. I like Houston on this one. But, man, is Tennessee good and also playing some of its best brand of basketball this time of year.
And then the final Four team will come from State Farm Arena, 505 tip tomorrow between Michigan State and Auburn. And I in my bracket, I took Auburn. I only do one. It's a family bracket is what we call it. And I took Auburn to win it all based on the simple assumption that I said, in a one-on-one matchup with anybody in the tournament, does Auburn win the game? And I said, yes, I'll take Auburn to win the game, you know, head-to-head against anybody here. The Spartans are going to have their hands full. I mean, they just
– oh,
Auburn,
yeah.
Auburn just comes at you, not only Broome, but they just come at you in waves. And one of the things I think more so maybe than any other team, including Alabama, including Duke, when Auburn gets rolling downhill, they are – you're not stopping them.
Yeah. Yeah, they've got they're a different level even in terms of size with not just Broome but with Cardwell as well. And how about, you know, the guy that's right here in our own backyard came from Parkview High School with Kelly that they have as well. And Chad Baker-Mazzara is one of the better defenders in college basketball. I like Sparty on this one, and I'll tell you why. Outside of the fact that Michigan State is a team that typically plays better as an underdog than they do a favorite a lot of times. We talked about how they haven't played their best brand of basketball in the tournament yet. That's still left to be seen. And it's hurtful to the fact that, you know, they're one of the worst three-point shooting teams in college basketball this year. Auburn's playing at home, you know, basically, and it feels like their own backyard if you were watching that game on yesterday. But Auburn gets off to some slower starts, and so Michigan State does too. So it kind of appears as if it will be a more of a, you know, muck it up grinder, maybe some miscues and unforced errors and turnovers in the first half. That's what I would expect. But if Michigan State is going to have a chance at this game, it has to have not only that underdog approach to it where they play their best brand, but even more so when those shots are not falling for either team, they have to be coming long off of that rim where those quicker guards can kind of get to them and get out on the break, as Michigan State is one of the better teams in the country in terms of pace. So it wouldn't surprise me either way, whichever team ended up winning. Michigan State is just one of those teams that typically, you know, does Michigan State type things this time of the year. And I want to throw one more thing out there at you. Forgive me for getting long with it. How about this for a stat for you, John? In comparison to this year to the 2019 year, you have a generational player on Duke's side, obviously with Zion Williamson and Cooper Flagg. You also have a Michigan State team who beat Richard Pitino in the second round of the tournament. Right, this year New Mexico, last time in 2019 was Minnesota. You also have a a Texas Tech team who was also a 3 seed at that time, obviously went to the Final Four National Championship game. And in both of those years, what they have in common is Kansas was the number one team in the country in the preseason coming into the year and lost in the first weekend. So I don't know what any of that means or what it has to do with but I just thought that was really ironic that things have just kind of panned out that way. And in the event that Michigan State wins this game, all those things will hold true to go on to the Final Four, making Tom Izzo's ninth.
Well, for 14 teams and, you know, records that are being set by the SEC in this tournament, one of the interesting things of the four teams, half the Elite Eight is SEC, Deshaun, Auburn, Florida, Tennessee, Alabama. That would be the matchups in the Final Four if all four should win, because all four are in different regions, which is interesting. And they are the four big teams as well. There are no upsets coming out of the SEC. Those are the four top teams, and they have all matriculated to this point here. And it's up to the SEC to now really stand and deliver over the next couple of days to get to San Antonio. And because if they do that, if they get two or three, or God forbid four, but if they get three of the Final Four, then all this, you know, chatter about the SEC underperforming, that'll be a lot of shut me up juice. But they've got to perform now. So that, I think the onus and the pressure is on the SEC to deliver today and tomorrow.
Yeah, I know it can be probably taken as that way. I mean, the SEC has already been successful enough getting, you know, half of the Elite Eight's teams into the Elite Eight and having its chance. I mean, do I think that there will be four teams representing the SEC in the Final Four? No, I don't. Is it possible? Of course. But something else that we haven't seen, with the exception of one time in 2008, could happen as well, where there's all number one seeds that end up advancing to the Final Four, which we know how rare that is, too. So those are two things that I don't expect will happen. But I know that, you know, everybody has a tough game in front of them. The SEC being a tough conference, all that stuff makes a difference to a degree. You know, in terms of advancing on, because you prepare for these type of moments by playing the toughest games and so forth. But, you know, try telling that to Michigan State, Texas Tech, you know, Duke or Houston. They're sure that they're not, you know, hearing any of that and going to be looked into send the SEC home, you know, before we get to San Antonio.
All right, I didn't look this up before the interview, and I probably should have. I'm certain that no one conference has sent four teams to the Final Four. But I'm pretty sure, too, off the top of my head, that I've seen three from one conference on a couple of occasions, once from the Big East, pretty sure it was like Georgetown, Villanova, St. John's kind of thing, once from the Big Eight, when they had like Kansas and Oklahoma, and maybe Kansas State, I don't remember.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, wow. I think once from the Big Eight had three teams in the Final Four, because they had the national title game, too. It was like, you know, Oklahoma and somebody in Kansas, I forget. I'm pretty sure, Deshaun, without looking it up, nobody's ever sent four. So I mean, the SEC has a chance to make serious history. Yeah.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah. No, they do. And talk about what that would be, even, you know, to just this market and this region, the Southeast region, and all the talk that you get about football and this and that. And while that's definitely great, to be able to say that you're doing that on the basketball court as well with the great coaches that they brought in, I think that this has been a great example as to why we see some of the SEC success, some of the NIL deals and, you know, guys' transfer portal. I mean, who doesn't want to come to the Southeast region where the weather's typically great? I mean, all these things, a lot of these kids now in these AAU programs, it's not really so much about being loyal to the programs and the prestige and all that kind of stuff anymore. It's about the coaches and the loyalty to the coaches, and where the coaches go is where these reasons that these players tend to sign with these schools. And because they've done such a great job over the years of being able to add some great, great coaches to the conference, I think is why we're seeing them be so successful right now.
So Garrett Chapman looked it up. Big East, 1985, Georgetown, Villanova, St. John's. I was right 40 years ago. Mm-hmm. And just because I remember it, Villanova ended up winning the title that year, and Villanova was the number 8 seed. It is also the Villanova, the 8 is the lowest seed ever to win the title.
Rolly Massimino, is that correct?
Yep, correct.
Wow. How about that?
Yeah, how about
that? Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah. Enjoy the games, and we'll talk to you again tomorrow. I want to get your kind of instant react tomorrow to what you
will
see.
Will do. Tonight. Can't wait. Looking forward to it. Right. Thanks for having me, guys. Appreciate
take
it.
Take hoops.
There you go. A little tongue twister.
Right,
have a good one.
Deshaun Tate, our college basketball insider and expert. All right. To the phones we go, and you are now the guest between now and 2 o'clock. Got a couple of things. You can certainly weigh in on the Sweet 16 if you're an Auburn, Tennessee, Florida, Alabama fan. Is the SEC now a basketball conference? Oh, does that hurt? Hey, it might be. Okay. And a couple of tweets we got to tell you about next, one involving the Braves and one involving Kirk Cousins on Sports Radio 92 on the game.